week, an AP Ipsos poll found only 30% of the American public right now approves of the Republican-led Congress's job performance. And by a 49-33% margin, the highest ever, the public says it favors Democrats over Republicans when asked which party should control Congress. New York Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton is raising a lot of campaign money, even though she's only running against poorly funded Senate opponents. Rodham Clinton raised more than $6 million in the first 3 months of the year alone, according to papers filed today with the Federal Election Commission. The $2 million a month fundraising pace in 2006 is giving her almost $20 million cash on hand at the end of March for Clinton's New York Senate reelection campaign. Some analysts are saying Mrs. Clinton is raising money at a presidential pace, although she insists she is not thinking about beyond 2006 to the 2008 race for the White House. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. today expressed some interest in succeeding Hillary Rodham Clinton as senator if she's elected president in 2008. Kennedy says, quote, if the seat became available, I might do it. The son of the New York senator, Democratic presidential candidate Robert Kennedy, gave an interview published in the May issue of Elle magazine on newsstands today. Widespread criticism of the government's sluggish response to Hurricane Katrina was largely deserved, according to the Homeland Security Department's internal watchdog. His report criticizes the agency for focusing on terrorism at the expense of preparing for natural disasters in the U.S. The report by Inspector General Richard Skinner, to be released tomorrow, includes 38 recommendations for improving disaster response missions by Homeland Security and FEMA. This is Air America Radio News.
good evening, Truth Seekers. How you doing? Malloy here on Air America Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Very quick, before we get too deep into the program, get on the phone, call a couple of friends, and tell them what's going on here to join you. Huh? No? Don't want to do that? All right. We apparently we're very close to some kind of a revolt. I won't call it a move against Don Rumsfeld, but a revolt by officers. I'm talking about active duty officers. The fifth retired general has spoken out now about Rumsfeld, about his incompetency and the fact that he should be fired. I'll bet when these guys get together and talk off the record, they don't use terms like, you know, I think he should be fired. It's really building. And it's building because of the incompetence. It doesn't make any difference what area of governance that the Bush crime family is involved. The hallmark of each one of those areas is total incompetence. Just completely in over their heads. Now, these are supposed to be the adults. Remember that? Huh? Remember the snotty-ass comments when George Bush and his cronies stole the presidency from Al Gore? Now, okay, we're getting rid of Bill Clinton. We're bringing in the adults now. Have these guys done anything? One single thing? And again, I toss out the challenge to you right-wingers, you Bush supporters. Name one thing that your boy has done to that shows the ability to lead or govern or be the president of the United States. One thing. I'll take anything. Anything at all. As long as it's not, well, he cut taxes for the billionaires. You know, if you've got something, bring it on. But you don't, of course. Where it concerns waging of war, the highest command of the U.S. military never wants to go to war. Some of them do, because that's how they get an extra star, or that's how they advance in rank. But for the most part, they don't go to war. The real tacticians, the ones who understand strategy, the ones who understand tactics, the ones that understand diplomacy and what the military is all about. Yes, you can use my military, these military leaders will say, but only if the Republic or the Constitution is in dire threat. Now, this is a lesson that it has taken the military 200 years to learn, but they have learned it. For the most part, there's some, this General Boykin, this psychopath who sees demons on, I don't know, riding across the sky on motorbikes or whatever, you know, forget him. I'm talking about the ones who are now speaking out. And below the general, the rank of general, a lot of the colonels and majors are also speaking out, who are on active duty. They're speaking out anonymously, anonymously, for obvious reasons. There is, I don't know if it's an unspoken rule or a written rule, but when you're in the military and you're on active duty, you don't rebel against the chain of command. And the chain of command, of course, starts with this doofus, this fifth grade educated idiot in the White House. But he has handed everything off to Rumsfeld. So anyway, we're going to look at that tonight. It's really a miserable. What I hear on Randy Rhodes today, it's a hell of a note when you start wishing for a military coup or something to that effect, that the only way out of a situation in the United States is if the military... Oh, man. It just gets more bizarre and more bizarre every day, doesn't it? Yesterday, Jonathan Alter was on Countdown with Keith Olbermann, and they were discussing this corrupt administration and the plans to nuke Iran or whatever. And here's a little bit of the transcript. Jonathan Alder said, apparently, Olbermann said something about Franklin Roosevelt or a book about him. Alter says, now you mentioned this book about Franklin Roosevelt. Well, everybody remembers what he said. What he said was, quote, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, end quote. It sometimes seems with the Bush crowd that their motto is the only thing we have to use is fear itself. So I think you could see coming up on these midterm elections is them trying to use fear to restore their political position. And then Alter goes on to say, referring to Bush, I think pretty much, which is why there are a lot of people who expect him to move in the polls. Once you're tagged as an incompetent, that's pretty hard to recover from. Oh, people who don't expect him, that's pretty hard to recover from. And Alter says, I mean, you got a situation now where, you know, in workplaces across America, if somebody says he's a real Dick Cheney, what they mean is a guy who sounds like he has a lot of gravitas in those meetings at your company and looks the part, but is actually, you know, kind of full of it and can't get the job done. Yeah. Kind of full of it. Last night, a caller, I think the last caller last night was complaining, and probably rightfully so. I'm not using it in a pejorative sense, but he was complaining about how folks are bitching and moaning about the terrible situation here. Why don't we do anything? Why don't we call a general strike like the French do? Why don't we stop buying things? One day of not contributing to the great American marketing machine. You know, ideas like that. And the general strike idea, which is used, has been used by citizens of countries around the globe when they really wanted to make a point, just like what has happened recently in France. After the leadership of France said they would not back down, you put a million people in the street every single day saying, yes, you will back down. Well, eventually they do, and they did. Now, I know the half-witted Republicans say, well, that's because they're French. No, it's because they're politicians. And that would work in this country. But apparently we're not going to do it. Not yet. I'm not sure what it's going to take. Not yet. But anyway, the caller was talking about this. I got an email from Prairie 2. And Prairie 2 writes, hey, Mike, general strikes were common during the Great Depression, though they were not generally covered in the press. The Republican crime family has been working for decades to prevent any such thing from being possible. Corporate control of all resources is so complete that everybody would starve long before anybody and the ruling elite would be affected by a general strike. You can't force these people to do anything by marching or striking. If you take up pitchforks and torches, you have to be willing to storm the castle. Yeah, I get both points there. I really do. The caller last night in Prairie 2 from emailing me today. Both points come to you loud and clear. But the nearest example is how the immigrant population took to the streets in the past 10 days and literally forced, whether anyone wants to admit it or not, it is immaterial, literally forced the United States Senate to reconsider and to soften what the United States House, the corrupt, the real neo-Nazis are in the House, the bill that they had passed regarding immigration, you know, turning people into felons and locking them up, and, you know, priests or nuns or you or me who assisted somebody in desperate need of assistance, you know, like Jesus would, if they're an illegal immigrant, you or I could be charged with aiding and abetting a felon, which makes us a co-conspirator. That's the mentality of the United States House of Representatives, the Republican Party in the U.S. House of Representatives. All the demonstrators took to the streets, and whether you want to admit it or not, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what you and I think. You and I, native-born or American citizens or American citizens not born here, it really doesn't matter what you and I think. The truth is, with the hundreds of thousands, the organizers are claiming at least a million people taking to the streets in massive demonstrations, all of that had a direct effect on the thinking, if you will, of United States senators. And as a result, the Senate bill, as it works its way, or has worked its way through the committees, has taken out a lot of the hate-filled, anti-Jesus, poisonous, kill Emma Lazarus kind of rhetoric, and replaced it with ways and means where immigrants who come to this country, legal or not, can work towards citizenship. So, how did I get on that? Oh, that's right, about the demonstration. So, I maintain that it would have a powerful effect. I kind of disagree with Prairie 2 on this. A general strike, if we prepared for it, we being the people, screw the politicians, if we prepared for it and held out, we could probably accomplish a hell of a lot more than we possibly think we could at this point. But not a man moved, their eyes gazed straight ahead, till one by one they stepped back, and not a word was said, and the old general was left with his own words echoing in his head. He then prepared to fight, he said, I have seen the others. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Your loan's enemy, grubs. Their mission? To destroy your loan. So, backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created season-long grub control with merit. Number one choice of professionals. No other formula kills more grubs. Plus, a single application protects your lawn for an entire season. Guaranteed. To grubs, it's the end of the road. To lawns, a new lease on life. Bayer Advanced season-long grub control. Better science, better results.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you as alarmed as I am by the assault on our freedoms by the religious right? An essential element of freedom is the right to choose or reject religious beliefs. And this is why I fully support the Freedom From Religion Foundation as it takes the lead in challenging the growing threat from the religious right in the United States. If you'd like further information on the dangers of living in a theocracy, please call 800-335-4021. 800-335-4021 or visit their website, ffrf.org.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Email here from Claire. Hi, Mike. I'm from L.A. Tonight I filled my tank, and the price for regular gas was $2.95 a gallon. It makes me cry because I have workers who must drive. They do maintenance work, and they cannot afford this. We pay all of our workers better than most. We pay $12 an hour and up, but that doesn't make their lives easy, not in California. I'm raging. but need a million to join me. Here in California, Halliburton is refurbishing the Japanese internment camps for, quote, detention centers, end quote. Who's going to be detained? I envision anyone who speaks out against the neocon agenda may be detained. If so, I'll be on the list. We can't trust elections anymore here in California, a blue state. They are purging the voting rolls. Why? Also, against the wishes of the California legislature, Diebold machines are going to be used. Our recent Secretary of State showed that they were faulty, and the state was not going to use them. Now we have an Arnold Schwarzenegger-appointed person who is going forward with Diebold. I want to vomit when I hear Bush invoke 9/11 and those dastardly criminals. He and his cronies masterminded it, so they're the ones who should be exposed. The fact that he disdains and demonizes Muslims as the people out to get us when it was he and his crime family and cronies that got us infuriates me. Mike, I predict there would be civil disobedience and violence to take back America for the people. We may need a civilian militia since the powers that be will bring out the army to quell our anger. See, I get emails like that all the time. Folks are really, really, really pissed off. I mean, really angry. Absolutely angry. It's one thing to be irritated by the actions of a government. It's something else, our government, something else to be, you know, to question and to be maybe a bit disdainful. But I have never, in the 20 years I've been doing talk radio, I've never seen, and since I've been politically aware, which goes back about 40 years, I don't think I've ever seen the sort of rage that exists in so many people out there. People who just want to go about their lives. I mean, they may be liberals, they may be progressives or Democrats, but not normally activists. I don't think any of us. I mean, how many of us want to be activists? We'd like to see things work right. We'd like to see people have health insurance. We'd like to see poor folks have a chance. We'd like to see people who can't take care of themselves be taken care of. We'd like to see our tax money used for something other than death and destruction and war. We don't want to picket. We don't want to march. We want things to be placid and decent and just enough that marching and picketing and screaming and demanding is not necessary. But what I'm seeing, what I'm reading, just email after email, they just roll in here. I get hundreds. I feel so bad because I can't answer them. I just can't do it. We don't have a staff. I've said this before. It's Kathy and me, period. End of story. There's just no way. I appreciate everything that you folks write, but I just can't answer it. And I read these emails about the rage, the hurt, the anger, the shock that the United States of America, the leadership of this country, has devolved to the point of this Bush crime family. And the rage. People are so pissed off because we didn't do anything to deserve this. We didn't vote this bastard in either time. We didn't. But we have to suffer for it. So the anger out there is, and sometimes the emails that come in, I can tell by the way they're written that as the person is writing this particular email, he or she is not paying too much attention to syntax or sentence structure or anything like that. It's just like a release. Pump it out in the email and hit send. Don't even bother with spell check because they're so pissed off. I hear you. I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I don't send any emails to anybody. I just talk with Kathy. Probably should send emails. Anybody know what this is? A cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. Yeah, that's the West Point Cadet Honor Code. Very simple. A cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. There's a website up, West Point Grads Against the War.org. West Point Grads Against the War.org. They say their purpose is to help reclaim the honor of the United States of America. These are West Point graduates against the war in Iraq. I want to read what their mission statement is right after this break. A cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. For the West Point graduates who spent 4 years living under that code and have attempted to carry it with them outside the walls of the West Point Military Academy, it must be horrifying in the age of Bush.
Thomas Jefferson makes me want to cry to think that the chair he sat in someone could buy. George wears his faith like a money belt, but I'll pray to Mad Time instead.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
If you're looking for the ideal job, we have immediate openings for mystery shoppers. You get paid to shop, dine and drink at restaurants, and even go to the movies. Companies will pay you to be their eyes and ears. You'll tell them how you, a customer, are treated and how their prices compare. Full or part-time, as a mystery shopper, you set your own hours and pick your own assignments. Bring home hundreds of extra dollars. To qualify, you must be able to read and write, be over 18, have a checking account, credit or debit card, and internet access. For a small fee, mystery ShopLink gives you your training and your secret assignments. All you need to do is shop. Call now and you'll get a $1,000 online catalog gift certificate. Order what you want. As a mystery shopper, you get to keep the goods free. This is a very limited offer, so call right now. Call 1-888-889-6993 to find out how you can get paid to shop. That's 1-888-889-6993. Paid shopping assignments are now available in your area. 1-888-889-6993. Offer not available in Nevada.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old, and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
It wasn't all that long ago that we started military operations. We've been there, how many days? You're counting the days since we've been there, because I'm not.
Did Saddam Hussein have a weapons program?
Twenty-five before the hour. West Point Cadet Honor Code. A cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. This, of course, is a primary officer training facility for the United States Army, U.S. Military Academy at West Point. Their mission statement is as follows. You can check this out, westpointgradsagainstthewar.org. Instilled by the cadet honor system with a fundamental, longstanding respect for truth, we graduates of the United States Military Academy believe that honor is a basic attribute of character. That we are no longer cadets is irrelevant. We stand appalled by the deceitful behavior of the government of the United States and, in particular, its widely known malefactors. Lying, cheating, stealing, delivering evasive statements, and quibbling not only has demeaned these deceivers and the United States of America, but has placed vast numbers of innocent people in deadly peril. We will not serve the lies. The war in Iraq was launched illegally. It has since killed tens of thousands of innocents, causing incalculable damage to Iraq and the Iraqi people, as well as the reputation of the United States of America. We will not serve the lies. When we West Point graduates took our commissioning oath of office one past June morning, we swore to protect our nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The deceitful connivances of the current administration have resulted in a war catastrophic to our nation's interests, politically, economically, militarily, and morally. We now stand to protect our nation from these deceivers. We will not serve their lies. We seek justice for all victims of this illegal war, both servicemen and servicewomen, and the citizens of Iraq. To our purpose, we invoke the words of Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence, whereby we, too, mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Now, who's behind westpointgradsagainstthewar.org? I don't know. You can take it at face value. I visited the website today. It looks pretty legit to me. It's, I think it's a reflection of what's happening with people who are. Now, it doesn't say whether or not the West Point grads are still in service. Of course, they're not in the academy anymore, but they may still be in service. But who knows what's behind some of these websites these days, right? But one thing we do know is that when retired Army Major General John Batiste, who commanded the 1st Infantry Division in Iraq in 2004 and 2005, when he says, regarding Donald Rumsfeld, we need leadership up there that respects the military as they expect the military to respect them. And he calls for Rumsfeld to step down. Batiste noted that many of his peers feel the same way. He says, quote, it speaks volumes that guys like me are speaking out from retirement about the leadership climate in the Department of Defense. He made these comments on CNN yesterday. Batiste's comments resonate especially within the Army, because it's widely known there that he was offered a promotion to 3-star rank if he would return to Iraq after 2005 and be the number 2 U.S. military officer there. But he declined because he said he no longer wanted to serve under Donald Rumsfeld. Batiste said he believes that this administration's handling of the Iraq War has violated fundamental military principles such as unity of command and unity of effort. In other interviews, Batiste has said he thinks the violation of another military principal, ensuring that there are enough forces, helped create the Abu Ghraib abuse scandal by putting too much responsibility on incompetent officers and undertrained troops. Now, when you add Batiste, he's the retired commander of key forces in Iraq, and he called yesterday for Rumsfeld to step down. Get out of town. Jesus, when was the last time you remember this happening? Come on, in your lifetime. I'm not talking about Smedley Butler. I'm talking about in your lifetime, in our lifetime. When's the last time you could think of military officers, even back in Vietnam, they weren't calling for McNamara to step down. McNamara was the most bumbling, psychopathic, out of touch with reality defense secretary since Melvin Laird. There was another one. That was Nixon, Secretary of Defense. Even with sickos like Laird and McNamara, as far as I know. Now, maybe it did happen, but I don't remember reading about it or hearing about it. Do you? Where the top-ranking military officers retired. Yeah, of course. Yeah, no matter how bad it gets, unless these guys decide to overthrow the government, no matter how bad it gets, they're not going to violate the principle of the military takes its orders from a civilian command. There's a 230-year history of this in the United States. That's the one thing that has separated us, has it not? From other countries who might have tried various forms of self-government. The Brits? I don't know about the Brits. I should know, but I don't know. Marine Lieutenant General Gregory Newbold, who held the key post of Director of Operations from 2000 to 2002, wrote the essay in Time magazine this week that we quoted from, quote, "We won't get fooled again." Oh, Jesus. Newbold called for, quote, "replacing Rumsfeld and many others unwilling to fundamentally change their approach," end quote. Now, who would that be? Last month, you remember the Army Major General retired, Paul Eaton, wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times in which he called Rumsfeld incompetent strategically, operationally, and tactically. Rumsfeld, Eaton wrote, must step down. This is the guy, this general, oversaw the training of Iraqi Army troops in 2003 and 2004. And, of course, there was retired Marine General Anthony Zinni, who pretty much has said the same thing. Now, these are combat officers. These are combat officers. Zinni says he absolutely thinks Rumsfeld should leave. Combat officer. Flag rank. I mean, these are not lieutenant colonels or colonels or majors or captains. These are generals. Jesus, God. These are people in total command of military forces trying to operate with the incompetency and the criminality of Rumsfeld and Bush and Cheney and the rest of these cowards, all of whom ducked military service. Oh, I know Rumsfeld's in the military. He hid under his desk. All of these people who avoided, don't understand the military any more than they understand anything else. And the generals have had enough. Now, what does Lawrence DeRita, a counselor to one of the Defense Department lawyers, he's disagreed with the generals, the retired generals' characterizations of Rumsfeld's style. DeRita says, people are entitled to their opinions. What they're not entitled to is their own facts. What? Their opinions? This is war, you halfwit. These are people that are being ordered by the Bush crime family to send men into combat and die. Bush doesn't send anybody into combat. He likes to pretend he does that. Because he lives in a pretend world, he likes to dress up and jump out of fighter jets and land on decks of aircraft carrier. Bush doesn't know a damn thing about military tactics or strategy. And Cheney does? Rumsfeld. So DeRita says people are entitled to their own opinion. These are not people. These are generals. Other retired generals who will not speak on the record said they think it's unlikely that the denunciations of Rumsfeld and his aides will cease. Retired Lieutenant General Wallace Gregson, who until last year commanded Marine forces in the Pacific Theater, said, quote, a lot of them are hugely frustrated, in part because Rumsfeld gave the impression that, quote, military advice was neither required nor desired in the planning for the Iraq War. General Gregson said he is sensing much anger among Americans over the Bush administration's handling of the war and thinks the continuing criticism from military professionals will fuel that anger as November elections approach. Another retired officer, Army Major General John Riggs, said he believes that his peer group is, quote, a pretty closed-mouthed bunch, but that even so, his sense is that everyone pretty much thinks Rumsfeld and the bunch around him should be cleared out. Rumsfeld and the bunch around him. Riggs said he emphatically agrees with the other generals, explaining that he believes Rumsfeld and his advisors have, quote, made fools of themselves, end quote. This is astonishing stuff. I'm shocked. And Rumsfeld stands out there with his press briefings, every day or every other day or whatever. In his valiumed out little world or wherever he lives, pointing his bony fingers and pounding on the podium and acting as though that he commands the respect of anybody. Oh, Peter Pace. What the hell is Peter Pace going to do? He's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And he's on active duty. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
But I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plants. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason. Call it love or call it...
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The lies, incompetence, greed, and pure stupidity of the Bush crime family are all revealed in the game Impeached. Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Mike Malloy. And if you despise this crime family like I do, you need to visit ImpeachBushGame.com and buy the only board game that's bold enough to tell it like it is. Go to ImpeachBushGame.com, buy your game, and check out the Bush, Satan Rove, and Deadeye Dick voodoo dolls. I've got my game, and I'm sticking pins in my Bush voodoo doll right now! So visit ImpeachBushGame.com and join in on the fun today.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. 40 million Americans suffer from allergies, 17 million from asthma, 37 million from sinus infections. Here's the thought. Change the air you breathe. An Orrick Professional Air Purifier completely renews the air in an average-sized room every 10 minutes. Try it free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200. 4200.
We'll be right back.
liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So, Mike in St. Paul emails in. Part of a very real danger in appointing a president with a fifth-grade intellect comes in the form of Pollyanna-ish loyalty, much like a dunce schoolboy who cannot let go of his obsessive attachment to the class hottie. Clings to his security buddy, Dom Rumsfeld, in the same manner. It matters not how many innocent children die. It matters not how many innocent civilians die. It matters not how many Americans die. And most of all, it matters not how the brutal combination of incompetence and bloodlust that is personified in Donald Rumsfeld has destroyed this country and others. What matters is that the schoolboy that has been appointed president cannot give up his crush on Rumsfeld, who we now know is a hindrance to the realization of the dream that is America, and we wait patiently for the dunce to be told to go stand in the corner. Or worse, it's turning into a very bizarre situation, isn't it? Retired military generals certainly have as much right to speak out as the next person, but I wonder if these generals would feel compelled to raise their voices, and there's six of them now, six flag rank generals who have spoken out against Rumsfeld. And by extension, they're speaking out against the Bush policies in the Middle East. There's no doubt there. There's no question there. Rumsfeld may be a total ass, but he has the blessings of the fifth grader who's running the country. But what is astonishing to me, and raises a question, is the fact that these generals are speaking out. What are we doing about it? The generals are speaking out, and the population of the United States is sitting on its hands. We have a man who took us into war based on lies. Everybody knows that now. And it wasn't even a war. It's an invasion that has cost the lives of I don't know how many Americans. Do you? 4,000? 6,000? Nobody knows. Those figures will never be revealed. They're classified. And how many dead Iraqis? Nobody knows. They're classified, too. Who was it that said, we don't do body counts? Was that Rumsfeld that said that? We don't do body counts, you sick bastard. So nobody knows. Nobody knows. And now they're talking about taking us into another one. First, Afghanistan, which never should have been a military operation. In my humble opinion, it should have been a police operation. We should have enlisted every single resource we had to track down, if the official story is true, the people who organized the attack on this country on September 11th, brought them to justice, tried them, and executed them. End of story. But no, we've got these little toy freaks in office in this country who decide, oh, no, let's go to war. Let's invade. Oh, let's get the military. Yeah, come on, boys. Go ahead. I'll stay back here and take care of stuff. Go, go, go. And then Iraq. No reason whatsoever. You want to remove a tyrant? Let's start on the continent of Africa. Okay? Let's sweep through the continent of Africa. If we're really interested in removing tyrants, let's start there. It was the oil and the military bases and the competition we're going to have with China for natural resources, in the next 3-4 years. And now Iran. And so what are we doing? What are you and I doing? Well, I know what I'm doing. I'm sitting here on my ass at about 5 minutes before 11 on a Eastern time on a Thursday evening, thinking that I'm doing something by talking about it on this radio program. Yeah. Well, no. I take that back. I don't think I'm doing anything about it. But I think to myself, where's and I can't help but do this. Where's the dedication I had 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago? When my daughter Wendy was born, and her mother and I and baby Wendy used to go to a park in Richmond, Virginia, and hand out this is going to sound ancient, ban the bomb balloons. Ban the bomb. And a few years later, when I was doing some work at North Carolina State University, you know, peace marches, working for the new mobilization committee to end the war in Vietnam, cranking out handbills on a mimeograph machine. Look it up. And then the anti-nuke movement in the 70s, hanging out with the Clamshell Alliance and the Evergreen Alliance and all these different anti-nuke groups that here in the Southeast especially. And on and on and on and on, trying. And the impeached Nixon rallies, getting gassed on the tear gassed by the D.C. cops in front of the Department of Justice. And for the first time, you know, feeling that sting, you know, where you can't breathe, you can't see, you can't do anything, you want to claw your eyeballs out. So here I am now, you know, when my country is under the most severe threat in, oh, I don't know what, maybe 100 years, 150 years? I don't know. It feels awful. What am I doing? Well, I'm much older now, and I've got a 21-month-old baby, and of course, when Wendy was 6 months old, we were handing out the balloons. I don't know. I don't know what to do anymore. Do you?
Malloy on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor. Now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really works.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
America Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley. Rumsfeld, unfriendly fire. A growing number of military commanders who served under Donald Rumsfeld say he has botched the Iraq operation, ignored the advice of his generals, and should be replaced. The White House insists that Rumsfeld retains the confidence of George Bush. Retired Army Major General John Riggs today became the fifth general to publicly say Rumsfeld should quit. In an interview with National Public Radio, Riggs cited what he called an atmosphere of arrogance under Rumsfeld. Pentagon spokesman Eric Ruff said Rumsfeld has not talked to the White House about resigning and is not considering it. An Iraqi official says the brother of one of Iraq's most prominent Sunni Arab politicians was shot dead in Baghdad. A local Sunni official says the brother of party leader Tariq al-Hashimi and a friend were killed when gunmen opened fire on their vehicle. Police confirmed the attack but wouldn't confirm the identities. Earlier this month, two other prominent Sunni politicians said close relatives had disappeared. One blamed al-Qaeda in Iraq for trying to frighten politicians into abandoning their roles in government. U.S. and the Iraqi commanders are increasingly critical of a policy that lets Iraqi soldiers effectively go AWOL with no punishment. They blame the lax rule for draining the Iraqi military ranks confronting the insurgency. They say in some cases down 30% or even 50%. Iraqi officials say they have no choice but to allow the policy or they wouldn't get any volunteers at all. Most armies threaten imprisonment or fines for soldiers who abruptly leave their units, but the Iraqi army does not require its soldiers to sign contracts. That means they can quit any time and casually treat enlistments as temporary jobs. Iraqi soldiers can even pick up their belongings and leave during missions, and apparently they do so without facing punishment. Any shortage of Iraqi troops could complicate the U.S. command's larger plans to hand more security responsibilities to Iraqi forces by the end of the year. The death penalty trial of Zacharias Moussaoui to resume now on Monday. Today the admitted al-Qaeda conspirator told jurors he has no regret, no remorse. Moussaoui also said if he had only had a Muslim lawyer, maybe he could have been exchanged for captured U.S. soldiers. And he says he's convinced George Bush will set him free because of a vision he had, which he said was as vivid as his dream of flying a plane into the White House. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. Seven past the hour. Email here from James. Mike, it has come to this. James writing a reference to the report on the generals who are raising hell now. Mike, it has come to this. These bigwig generals who were just taking orders, by God, now criticize the immorality that they so eagerly participated in from the safety of their very fat pensions and golf carts. The same guys who let a female corporal from Hill Country take the hit for Abu Ghraib. These corrupt blanks cannot redeem themselves now. Yeah, well, that's very true. You know, I mean, that's why when I hear this stuff from the generals, there's a lot of mixed emotions, mixed feelings on my part. Where were these generals? Whatever. One more here. Sheila writes in, reference the five generals, six now, who have stepped up to the plate recently. Excuse me, in an effort to force Rumi to retire. There will be more, Sheila writes. I worked for the Air Force for 6 years and the Army for 24 years, and I know these guys. I would bet that there have been many meetings in various emergency operations centers, EOCs, trying to get some control over the chaos that is destroying all the services. Bush, Cheney, Rumi have recently moved the brass down a couple of notches within the chain of command and put civilian cronies into the position of the service secretaries, you know, like Secretary of Army, Secretary of Navy. These secretaries must now go through a civilian layer to get to the Secretary of Defense. The military, Sheila writes, from privates to generals, take their credo of duty, honor, country very seriously. They live and die for it. However, they're not idiots. The so-called duty Bush is demanding of them has nothing to do with honor or country. And commanders get a little pissed off if they are being forced to put their troops in harm's way for no good reason. They are committed to protecting their troops. So, yes, I think the military will pull the plug on him, Rumsfeld, at the first opportunity. But it will not be primarily for us, and it shouldn't be. There are far more of us than there are of them. And we have quivered in our corners for 5 years, sobbing and gnawing on our hair, rather than doing what we should have done. It will be for the troops. And that's the way it should be. Okay. Let's do some phone calls here. Would you like to do that? Sure, let's do that. Phone number here is 866-303-2270, by the way. Aldous is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Aldous, welcome to the program. Is that Aldous like in Huxley?
Well, that's the first name, yeah.
Oh, well.
I can't claim the last name, but I'd like to.
Well, glad you called in, Aldous. What's up?
Well, you were you laid down the challenge for conservatives to call in and give at least one good thing Bush
yes.
has done. And while I'm not a conservative, I will definitely lay down one good thing he's done.
What's that?
I think that he's been the single most centrifying point for the liberal and progressive movement in the past 30 years.
That's a good possibility if the liberals and the progressives can wake up.
Well, exactly. But, you know, here's one of my thoughts on this. I've heard it said that saying you're not interested in politics is like saying, is like a drowning man saying that he's not interested in water.
Yeah.
And what's essentially happened is Bush has made this more of a reality than ever before because suddenly I think more and more people are waking up to find that they're drowning.
I know I am.
Well, and I think the more people find themselves cut off from their air supply, let's say, I think the more people will actually wake up and do something, and I think that's exactly the source of this fury that you've been talking about.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just saying that, and frankly, it's one of those things which, again, I as much as it's a horrible thing that, in as much as he has to be so inspirational for our ire by doing all these terrible, terrible things, but on the other hand, we're a notoriously hard group to get organized around anything, and frankly, I think he's been one of the biggest focus points we've had. I don't know about ever, but certainly in recent memory.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I have to remind myself, it took 5 years. It wasn't until the fifth year of the war in Vietnam until Americans started to take to the streets in large numbers demanding an end to the nonsense. Of course, it went on for another five, another four, but it took 5 years before Americans decided that Nixon and Johnson before him were doing something that was just hideously immoral. So.
Absolutely, and if you recall, it was just before the war that we had millions of people
yes.
in the streets here, and that was at a time when President Bush's popularity rating was way up in the, 60s, 70s or better, and that
Well, that's why I can't understand why nothing happens now. You know, prior to the war, I read something that said Bush and Blair's actions inspired 10 million people to take to the streets in pre-war anti-war demonstrations, 10 million, you know, around the globe. And now, yeah, there are demonstrations occasionally going on in the UK or in Germany or, oh, I don't know, sometimes here in this country. You know, I was just involved in one that got, 5,000 people together here in Atlanta. But I just don't quite get it, all this, why we haven't done more.
Well, for one thing, too, the 5,000 that you got in Atlanta, I don't know, honestly, how accurate amount of reporting we're getting across the country from our media on what...
Well, I was there, and I think 5,000 was a fairly good number.
Right. Well, no, I understand that, like, you had 5,000 in Atlanta, but who knows how many other cities had what. I know that here in Madison we had a really good turnout that I would have said would have been easily between 3 and 5,000, and that's just Madison.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, really, if you think about it, where was the reports on those protests? They really were non-existent, except for on places like Air America.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, Aldous, thank you for checking in. I hope to hear from you again. Take care, okay?
You're welcome.
All right. Let me go way off topic here for a second. We had a call last night from Janice in one of the suburbs of Detroit. Was it Highland Park, Kathy? Janice, if you're listening tonight, if you could call in, I've gotten just a whole lot of responses to your situation where people just genuinely want to help you. And it's already gotten kind of organized, but there's no place to go with what folks out there want to do unless you call in and we can work something out about how to do this, if you want to do it. I mean, you may not want to do it, but listening to your call last night about having a flashlight around your neck and no power on in your house and having to go to your friends and getting your cell phone charged up and yikes, you know, a lot of people just listen to that and want to respond. And, you know, maybe you should, I hope you're listening, maybe you should call in because these are folks who you know, you touch them and they would like to they would like to help if that's what if that's okay with you. So Janice from Michigan, who called in last night. Can you call back in? Okay. All right, back to phone calls. Let me see here. Stu is calling from Sacramento. Hey, Stu, welcome to the program.
How are you tonight, Mike?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. It's always great to listen to you after a day's work. Listen, I wonder if you caught Colonel Wilkerson on C-SPAN last night at all.
No, I didn't. What happened?
Well, he gave quite a sharp assessment of Bush and the whole military machine. And the interesting thing to me is, and you know I've called your show before about this, is he purposefully use the expression military-industrial-congressional complex.
Oh, did he really?
Yes.
Hey, hold on a second. I got to take a break here. I'll come right back to you, Stu. Can you hold a minute?
Sure.
Okay. This is Air America. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Here's why. I don't get it wrong because we love America. But that's no reason to get hysterical. There may be a north of zero. But if we ain't waffles, we ain't having it. In a world gone mad from the big brother. City wants violence and it's fun. We're going on all day and night. Who's having fights and then violent fights? Shit.
family's pockets to get filled.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. One of the best things about getting an 8-pound Orrick XL vacuum is what you don't get, namely, a cloud of dust in your face every time you turn it on or when you empty it, which means you won't get a house full of bacteria that travels on dust. Call 1-800-989-4200 for free literature or a free 30-day home trial. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Orrick XL. 1-800-989-4200.
You've got lawn weeds and crabgrass growing, well, like weeds. Until they're up against the science of Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. All-in-One kills both lawn weeds plus crabgrass in one easy step without harming your lawn. Other leading brands take two products to finish the job. Got two types of weeds? Grab one simple solution and bring them back down to earth. Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. Better science, better results.
Signed today directs new funds and new focus to the task of collecting vital intelligence on terrorist threats and on weapons of mass production. In my state...
Weapons of mass production. All right, who are we talking to? Stu in Sacramento. All right, Stu, thanks for holding on.
Well, Mike, you know, I often thought that if a country music star could come out with a song called She's Got Weapons of Mass Destruction, it might be a hit. But I was just wanting to say about this military-industrial congressional complex that these folks in the military who we have always supported because they've supported us, they're true patriots. And they never wanted to be these private warmongers for these representatives up top. And it's finally coming to roost here for them. Mm-hmm. And just like Eisenhower warned us, they're coming out and saying it again. And when are we all going to listen to them? That's all.
Yeah, well, you make a good point. Thanks a lot, Stu.
Good night.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Willie T. from Democratic Underground writes in, the best quote from General Newbold on Rumsfeld. In the essay in this week's issue of Time, Newbold wrote, quote, "I now regret that I did not more openly challenge those who were determined to invade a country whose actions were peripheral to the real threat, Al-Qaeda." Close quote. And then Newbold went on to say, the decision to invade Iraq, he wrote, quote, was done with a casualness and swagger that are the special province of those who have never had to execute these missions or bury the results. End quote. Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing. I do believe that the ranking retired officers in the U.S. military are getting tired of having a bunch of chicken hawks who, over the course of their lives, when it was their turn to have a chance to join the military, in some instances to be drafted in the military, more or less gave the middle finger to the military and told it to leave, go away, piss off, get out of my face, not interested, don't want them to do that, got better things to do, scram. Well, at the same time, they stayed stateside, I'm referring to Vietnam, stayed stateside, and cheered on the so-called war effort in Vietnam, and were more than willing to applaud and clap for the people that were dying by the tens of thousands in Southeast Asia, but given a chance, well, what did Tom DeLay say? He couldn't get in the military because too many of those Negroes got there before him and took up all the available slots. That's what Tom DeLay, a real Christian, said. What did Cheney say? Cheney said he had better things to do in the 60s than deal with the military. What did Bush do? Like a lot of rich boys, his daddy got him into a champagne unit. Used to be when you joined the National Guard or the Reserve, it meant you stayed home, played with yourself, and got to wear a uniform and chat up the girls, do a little cocaine, do a little more cocaine, do a lot more cocaine. Don't show up for your physical because you ain't going to pass. Why not? Because of the cocaine! Oh, okay. Janice is on the line from Michigan. Hey, Janice.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. The question
is... I just turned the radio on and a little while ago, and I heard you say, if Janice is listening, have her call.
All right. Anything changed since last night?
Well, I got new batteries for the flashlight. It takes 4D batteries.
How do you maintain your sense of humor?
I've always been able to. I just have a bit. Oh, but I didn't tell you the pièce de résistance.
Yeah?
Last night.
Tell it.
Yesterday, my house was sold in foreclosure.
Oh,
I've been living in this house for 24 years, right?
Yeah.
And I got 4 months behind, you know, because couldn't find a job. The unemployment ran out. And so I called the mortgage company, you know, and they said, So I tried to file bankruptcy. I went to see an attorney last week. And, of course, with the new bankruptcy law, they make it harder and harder for ordinary people to file. So, and besides, you have to have a job to file. So anyway, So well, 6 months.
Wait a minute. What do you mean you have to have a job?
Well, you have to be able to, if you want to file Chapter 13 to save your property.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. You can file Chapter 7.
Can you hold on a second?
Yeah.
All right, hold on, because I got to do a break here. Don't go away, because we have to chat for a moment. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
I just gotta wonder what my daddy would have done. He'd see the way they turned his dream around. I gotta go by what he told me. Try to tell the truth and stand your ground. Don't let the bastards get you down.
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 Don't let the bastards.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. John Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, we're talking with Janice, who called in last night from Michigan and evoked a response out of a fairly hefty number of our listeners. All right, here's Janice, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, here's the deal. When you told us last night of the situation we're in, and you know, you left off the foreclosure thing, which I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. It's sardonic laughter. I mean,
I know it's just outrageous. This is the Bush economy right here in southeastern Michigan. You know,
right?
And they keep bragging about 4.7% unemployment and. They need to come over here to southeastern Michigan and see what kind of unemployment we have. Not to mention, I heard on the news today that Ford Motor Company is closing two more plants today. So
yeah. Well, yeah. I want to ask you this: what's the deal on your house? If you're four payments behind, they started foreclosure. What does that mean?
Well, that means that I have to leave 6 months from yesterday. Now, I get to sell it, so I get my equity out of it.
Okay.
And, you know, and I have to move. And,
What about your light bill?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I have about another week and a half to wait for this other agency to get back to me, you know. And it's beautiful weather here and a lovely full moon, so you know it's not so bad. And I, in the evenings, my neighbor feeds me and lets me come down to her house, and you know, so it's all right. But and what I want more than anything is a job. And if there are any nice progressive attorneys who have offices in downtown Detroit listening, please contact Mike Malloy's show, and I'll give Mike and them my number, and then they can let me know, you know, because I don't want to blast my number all over the radio. But you know, that would be ideal. Is I need a job. That's all. I just need a job, and this other stuff will take care of itself. I will have to move, and that's unfortunate. I love my neighborhood. It's a good mix. You know, it's mm-hmm. diverse and all ages too. So, but you know, happens.
Do you need some do you need some help now? Because the people are offering some sort of help. I don't think anyone knew last night that your home is being foreclosed on. But in the meantime,
no, I forgot to tell you last night. It was like I was just laughing because of the whole flashlight thing, you know. But I it's so weird. I keep it by the front door, so when I come in, it's right there. But anyway, yeah.
Well, if you're going to be in your house for a while longer, and you're looking for a job, I mean, don't you need to have your utilities on?
Oh yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Well, like I say, in about a week and a half, this Wayne Metro agency supposedly is going to get back to me. But then I finally broke down about 3 weeks ago and went to the welfare office, and I really hated to do it, but I needed food. So when I took the utility bill there, the woman there said, well, I doubt it's Wayne Metro will help you because you're a single person. You have to, like, have children or an old person in your home or something, you know. And but we'll see. And then I got another bill from DTE, that's our power company, yesterday. And on the second pay, oh, and this is so funny, this was the official shutoff notice a week after they shut me off, because they never did send me an official shutoff notice.
Mm-hmm.
So on the second page, there was a little in fine print said something about shutoff will be forestalled for 21 days if we get a letter from a doctor, you know, regarding a medical condition. Well, since I'm insane, and you know, there's a little imbalance in my brain, so you know, it's just I'm joking, of course, but you know, it's
so
you know, I mean, like I said last night, my shrink loaned me her portable radio, so I saw her today, and she says she's going to write a letter and you know, and hopefully the utility will take it. She says, "No, I'm going to make it really bad. I'm going to make you sound really bad." And I said, "Okay, you know, whatever."
Well, who pays your shrink?
Oh, it's a free clinic.
Oh, you go to a clinic.
Yeah, it's free. It's wonderful. I get free meds, you know, and they're great. It's downriver in another suburb down here.
Right.
And downriver is a great area. I just love it. A lot of people don't like it, but I was raised here, and good people live down here, you know, hardworking people looking for work.
Ah, damn. Janice, is there anything that you feel that you need from...
A job.
But other than that, from our listening audience?
Well, if I believed in prayer, I'd say prayer, but I'm not so sure I do. And besides that, it might not turn out so good, according to that study that was done a few days ago about the heart attack people.
Yeah, that's true.
So don't pray for me, please.
All right,
well, bad things will happen.
Kathy here says that she has your email address. You use a computer at the library, right?
I sure do, yeah. I go up there every other day or so.
Okay, when we hang up, we'll put you on hold, or our associate producer will pick up the phone.
Okay.
In New York, where your call went, and if you'll give her your email address one more time, just to make sure we've got it,
okay.
And if I have your permission, I will give that email address to a couple of people who might want to get in touch with you. That you know, I'm not sure exactly what they'll have to offer, but there may be something that will help you out of this this situation. Are you open to that?
I am. Yeah. I think I can sift out, you know, what...
I don't think there'll be any crazies, although you never know. There might be some right-wingers who who hear... But I'm not going to announce your email over the air. I'm going to give it to someone who I think I know pretty well, and he will he'll get the word out.
Okay. Well, if any right-wingers, you know, if they want to get in on it, I say, bring it on!
All right, Janice, let's see what happens.
I'll keep you posted, Mike. I appreciate it so much.
Okay, maybe you can call in the first of next week and let me know if anything happened over the weekend. Now,
okay.
don't hang up. I'm going to let you go, but our associate producer up there will get on the phone with you and make sure we've got the email address correct, okay?
Okie dokie.
Thanks, Janice.
Thank you, Mike.
You bet. All right. Let's see what happens here. Okay, back to your phone call. Thanks. I'm glad Janice called back in. Jennifer is calling from New York City. Jennifer, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, are you still there?
I'm still here.
You know, that was kind of why I was calling in. I heard Janice last night. Can I give you my email address and pass it along, or whatever Mike just said that he'd...
Oh, no, this is Mike. You're talking to Mike.
Oh, Mike. Well, you said Jennifer, Mike, so...
Are you Jennifer?
No.
Who are you?
Not Jennifer. Richard in Portland.
Richard in Portland. Okay. I've got Jennifer in New York City on my screen.
Yeah, it's probably because they bumped Janice in, you know, when she called in.
Yeah, that could be. All right, Richard. All right, Richard in Portland.
Yeah.
Talk to me, Richard.
I was thinking there may be a way to... She mentioned last night that if she had $500 that the people would help her with some other stuff. I thought, you know, we might be able to establish some sort of a fund, and then, you know, those of us who have an ability to contribute a little bit could do it.
Well, I'll tell you what. What I'm going to ask people to do is just send me, if you're interested in helping Janice, send me a quick email that just says, yeah, I am. And I'm going to send it on to somebody that I trust. I'll send your email. He's going to organize it, and we'll see what we can come up with. So that way we're not doing a bunch of stuff over the air, and it can be done just kind of off screen, off stage. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. You wouldn't want to do it over the air. You know, I was in Vietnam, Mike, and when we were there, we got an awful lot of support. We didn't have nearly as many civilians working over there as we see here. And had one of those civilians or several of those civilians gotten, you know, like when they hung those guys off of the bridge in Fallujah,
right.
I don't think they would have sent the GIs in to retaliate against the whole city like that. The whole country seems to have gotten more ignorant and less careful, that is, care less about what's going on. You go in a tavern or a bar somewhere and you listen to the surrounding conversation, and nobody's talking about this terrible thing that's happening not only to our country, but we're bringing it upon the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I, you know, another thing is, I wouldn't have gone to Vietnam if I didn't have to go.
I hear that.
We had a draft back then. Oh, thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks for checking in. I do appreciate it, Richard. I'm sorry I called you Jennifer. Take care. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy on Air America.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
In the beginning, there was National Lampoon, Spy Magazine, and This is Spinal Tap. Then, comedy writer Tony Hendra showed us his spiritual side in the New York Times bestseller Father Joe. The Times Book Review called his memoir extraordinary, luminescent, and profound. But had Tony Hendra lost his comic edge? Ah, ye of little faith. Tony Hendra is back with a brand new novel, The Messiah of Morris Avenue. It's a slyly comic, deeply spiritual novel that imagines the second coming and an unlikely, lovable human new savior. Frank McCourt, the author of Angela's Ashes, says The Messiah of Morris Avenue is just what this country needs right now. A good dose of merriment in the face of craw-thumping righteousness. A rowdy book, but Lord, it's beautiful. And comedian George Carlin says it simply, I love this book. Thank heaven for Tony Hendra. The Messiah of Morris Avenue is at a bookstore near you from Henry Holt. Spread the word.
coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real.
Perhaps the most important lesson that I learned in Vietnam is that you cannot confight a guerrilla war with conventional forces.
From the ashes of the game, democracy is coming to the USA.
The lesson he learned in Vietnam. It's about 9 before the hour. Very quickly here, I got this email from Lonnie in Wiley, Georgia. Listen up. Hi, Mike. I work a shift where I can't listen live, but I will catch you tomorrow on the White Rose Society website. And then in parentheses he writes, I sent Ben $15. It's Maundy Thursday, the night when Jesus gave his disciples a new commandment, to love one another. The night before he was to be crucified, Jesus spoke with his disciples of love. Love, and not righteousness. It was to be the last lesson he would give to his closest friends. Love. Love makes one good. Rules make one righteous. Better to be good than righteous. In many churches tonight, Lonnie writes, an ancient practice is acted out, one initiated by Jesus himself. In my church, Episcopal, I watch people washing one another's feet during the church service. If it is done with an humble and giving heart, the act of washing another person's feet, whether a friend or stranger, a spouse or friend or relative, is a profound act of humility. Perhaps an even greater act of humility is to allow another to wash one's own feet. I, for one, felt that it was easier to wash another's feet than allow someone to wash my own. Is that pride of a different sort? I don't really know. The fact that I wrestle with the issue is, I hope, a good indicator of my own character, or perhaps my mentioning it shows the lack thereof. I'm not writing to talk about me, really. What I would like to say is this. Tonight I was struck with a profound insight. I could not imagine Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell washing the feet of another person. I know I'm not to judge, but I also know what Jesus said. By their fruits you shall know them. As a fruit inspector, I have to say that humility does not seem to be a virtue possessed by the harshest of those on the religious right. On the contrary, anger and pride and meanness of spirit seems to be the prevailing characteristic of these people. I grieve for them. I then ask myself another question. Would I be willing to wash Pat Robertson's feet? I can't answer that right now. I doubt that the opportunity will arise. I also know that I wouldn't know what I would truly do until the situation presented itself. I guess it amuses you that I wrestle with these issues. I'm an almost 50-year-old man. I drink too much. I'm ornery. I'm overweight and out of shape, and I'm wasting time wondering if in some fantastical circumstance I would wash the feet of someone I truly despise. Now that's funny. I'm not much of a Christian, I admit that. I don't know the answers, I admit that. But I will wash someone's feet in front of a bunch of other people. Maybe that's a start. I'd rather be good than righteous. Maybe that's a start too. Happy Easter, Mike, you and your family. I listen often. For what it's worth, sometimes I say a prayer for you. Peace. Lonnie, and his last name, and his city here in Georgia. Well, thanks for writing, Lonnie. That's right from the heart. That's a good letter. Thanks, Ronnie. Lonnie, I'm sorry. Russ is calling from New York City. Russ, welcome to the program. Hey, there's Russ. Hey, Russ. Russ? Okay, no Russ. Robert is calling from Miami, Florida. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. Yes, I wanted to talk about this State Department spokesman, who, sorry, I don't have his name, said yesterday that, as a scare tactic to try to get us into attacking Iran, said that Iran could have the fissile material, the uranium for a nuclear weapon in 16 days. And what I found quite astounding about this was not that he was safe, because what do you expect from this administration? But what I found astounding was that the media didn't immediately come on with, and I was going to suggest that you do this sometime, find some nuclear experts, because from what I have read, if you got a nuclear expert on the show, he would say this. All the nuclear experts I have read have said that Iran is somewhere between 3 and 10 years away from having nuclear weapons.
Yeah, who said this about 16 days? That's a lie.
Yes, it's an absolute lie. And the people who study this say that, I mean, look at North Korea. I mean, it's true that Iran is a much richer country than North Korea. But it's taken them 15 years to have 9 nuclear weapons.
Well, it's taken Iran 20 years to get where they're at. Now, there's an article in today's New York Times. Just the first sentence, it says, Western nuclear analysts said that Tehran lacks the skills and material and the equipment to make good on its immediate nuclear ambitions. Blah, 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 blah. They're putting anywhere from 5 to 10 years before Iran could have the capacity to build a nuclear weapon. And who is this person? This was a State Department spokesman?
A State Department spokesman, and it was played on, I mean, as you would expect, Drudge played it up very heavily on his site, and Drudge put the headline on there. But, I mean, a lot of the mainstream media did the same thing. And
well,
they put
just
the headline
just
on it, 16 days they could have enough nuclear material, and they have 160 centrifuges going, and the experts say you need 5,000 going
right
for several years.
Well, just we have to remember that what the Bush crime family is trying to do, the same thing with Iran that they did with Iraq. Remember all the threats, all the fear, all the intimidation. These bastards will say anything. I can just about unequivocally say the State Department guy was lying through his teeth. I have to leave it there, Robert. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
On Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
Your loan's enemy, grubs. Their mission? To destroy your loan. So, backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created season-long grub control with merit. Number one choice of professionals. No other formula kills more grubs. Plus, a single application protects your lawn for an entire season. Guaranteed. To grubs, it's the end of the road. To lawns, a new lease on life. Bayer Advanced season-long grub control. Better science, better results.
Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser. 9/11 conspirator Zakarias Moussaoui says he's not sorry for the terror attacks in 2001 and wishes he could see Americans suffer more pain. He was on the witness stand in his sentencing trial in Alexandria, Virginia. Moussaoui testified he enjoyed watching prosecutors show horrific images from a plane crash into the Pentagon on 9/11. He added that if he ever had the opportunity to kill Americans again, he would. The jury is to decide whether Moussaoui should be executed or receive a life sentence for his role in the terror attacks. Family, friends, and fellow Marines Thursday packed the First Baptist Church of Lyburn, Georgia, to say goodbye to Lance Corporal Kun Kim, who was killed in Iraq earlier this month. Reverend Ken Hull noted that John, as Kim was known, was born in South Korea, but moved with his family to the U.S. in 1985. He went to school in the U.S. and became an American citizen.
So today we honor the life of this American hero who laid down his life for the sake of his country, for the sake of freedom.
Kim was killed when a bomb went off underneath the Humvee he was riding in. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says Iran is isolating itself by defying a global call to halt its nuclear pursuits. Rice says Iran needs to realize it has no choice but to comply. The controversy is now before the UN Security Council. Rice said there must be some consequence for Iran's behavior. Meanwhile, Oregon Democratic Congressman Peter DeFazio is sending President Bush a letter reminding him that he needs congressional approval before taking military action. An autopsy is scheduled for today for the 49-year-old German woman who died a day after riding Mission Space at Walt Disney World's Epcot theme park. A Disney employee called 9/11 after she got off the ride.
She's feeling sick after taking the ride. She's feeling bad. So that she doesn't have any color on her face.
Is she completely awake?
It looks like.
Disney officials say the woman had high blood pressure along with other health conditions. The ride was reopened Thursday after engineers determined that it was functioning properly. The entire White House staff of about 160 people crowded into the Oval Office at 5:30 Thursday morning to bid farewell to Andrew Card. Only Dwight Eisenhower's chief of staff, Sherman Adams, held the job longer. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
Welcome back. Seven past the hour. It's Air America. Mike Malloy program. Back to the phone calls. Let's just do phone calls. All right. I've got a stack of topics here. I have one from Larissa Alexandrovna over at rawstory.com. You need to go to rawstory.com and read it. On the orders of Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, the U.S. is now outsourcing special operations and intelligence to an Iraq terror group. They're being sent into Iran. So go to rawstory.com and look for this story. It's Larissa Alexandrovna. Her story. She's one of the editors there, I think. Senior editor, senior writer? I'm not sure your title, Larissa. I apologize. Also, phone jamming records point to the White House. This is back from New Hampshire Democrats. There's just so many things to cover here. John McCain made a trip to Ohio to support Ken Blackwell, the Secretary of State there, who's running for governor, the thief, liar, sneak, fraud, criminal. You know, I see a lot of people writing that John McCain is a moderate. No, he is not. He is as much of a scumbag as George Bush. The fact that he served in the military really doesn't mean anything where it concerns his political point of view. John McCain, I just hope people are not fooled into thinking, like I was 6 years ago, fooled into thinking that John McCain is a moderate Republican. He is not. And it's easy to be fooled. I was fooled. I can remember having discussions on the program I had before I came to this network about, well, yeah, you know, if I had to vote for a Republican, I guess I would vote for John McCain. Oh, Jesus. That was 5.5, 6 years ago. Check him out. Check out his voting record. Check out what he's doing. He's a suck-up. He is, I don't know what he's trying to do. I really don't. But to stand there with this Ken Blackwell, the guy who stole the election from John Kerry in Ohio, which has now become the most politically corrupt state in the union, which is amazing. I always thought it would be, no offense, folks, but I always thought it would be Illinois or New Jersey or Florida. Or Nevada. It's Ohio. So all this stuff on the stack, America's Secret Police, somebody sent me this, Rumsfeld and Poindexter. I say Poindexter because the article from Newsweek doesn't say Poindexter, but this is what Poindexter does now. There is a possible merger in the works between Counterintelligence Field Activity, CIFA, which is a post-9/11 Pentagon creation that's been accused of domestic spying, and the Defense Security Service, a well-established older agency responsible for inspecting the security arrangements on defense contractors. The second one there, DSS, Defense Security Service, also maintains millions of confidential files containing the results of background investigations on American citizens. So Rumsfeld and Poindexter further corrupting the Defense Department, further destroying the Constitution, are trying to merge these two agencies and set up a super secret, well, it's being referred to as America's Secret Police. America's Secret Police. Jesus, God! Here it is. Defense analyst and Washington Post blogger Bill Arkin, who first brought allegations about CIFA's domestic spying to light, says that in its effort to try eliminate or trying to coordinate intelligence activities, we are, quote, creating American military secret police that is clearly acquiring way too much information and way too much power. American military secret police. But I'd rather hear what you've got to say tonight, so let's go back to the phone calls. Jennifer is calling from New York City. Now we have Jennifer. We had her on the wrong line. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I wanted to call with my perspective. I'm a 34-year-old woman living in New York who was raised on traditional democratic values, with parents that protested in Vietnam and, you know, continued to encourage us to speak out politically in protests. In fact, I went to the protests that you were referring to prior to the war, where millions of people turned out around the world. And
right.
I guess, I think in my opinion, there are two reasons that you're not seeing more action, and whether it's selfish or not, I don't know. But I think that the first one is that there's no draft this time. And
I've gotten several emails about that, Jennifer. As long as there's no draft, there's not going to be a sharp stick in somebody's body orifice to get them to move.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not an expert on the history of Vietnam, but I'm not sure that people, and you tell me, if people protested in the amounts that they did until they really felt threatened themselves, you know, of having to go. What I do know is that by this administration getting us into wars that we can't afford to fight, we don't have the people to fight, you know, very slyly, avoiding talking about drafts and letting the poor fight it and, you know, not bringing it up during campaigns. If they can't continue to invade countries like this without the manpower, and they're not going to be able to continue to do this without instilling a draft. And by, you know, their talk of Iran, which is sickening, I think that they're leading themselves down a road where you're going to start to see people beginning to move. The minute they feel that their own life is in danger, that college students are going to have to, it's not going to be an excuse anymore, and it won't be okay that you're single, and it won't be okay that you, you know, don't have children, you're going to see people really freaking out. The middle class will freak out.
But here's, but let me drop this in the conversation here, Jennifer. I'm beginning to believe that these sour and sorry old bastards that are running this country will not reinstitute a draft. Rumsfeld, I don't think Rumsfeld believes in a draft.
I agree with you.
They're going for private contractors.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. They're privatizing the military. That's their objective. They're using people in foreign countries, using terrorist organizations that may speak the language, where it concerns Iran. They'll use terrorist organizations to speak Farsi so they can get in there and destabilize and raise all kinds of hell. And don't forget, tactical nukes, stealth aircraft, cruise missiles. I don't think they would ever be so stupid as to institute a draft. Do you?
Well, I think that part of their strategy is to not institute a draft.
Right.
They would do everything that they possibly could before doing it because it would bring them down, you know?
I agree.
But it's, how much would something like that cost? Then again, they've spent billions a day, so I don't really know what our Congress would let them get away with.
Oh, the Congress, there's not a member of Congress that I'm aware of. Okay, there might be three or four in the House or the Senate, whoever says no to a defense budget, because if they say no, it means they're unpatriotic bastards that ought to be taken out and shot.
Exactly. The Democrats have become cowards to the propaganda and cowards to their own jobs. The other issue that I would raise is that, you know, I think that people are frustrated when they do something. I know that I've been, I don't know, over the past 10 years, just completely lowered in my feeling that we can do anything as a society, is because when millions of people turn out for a march and the leaders of all of our nations turn a deaf ear, you say, well, if millions turned out, what are 5,000 going to do? What is 200 going to do?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that people become very depressed. You know, I went to Pennsylvania to hand out leaflets in poor areas for Kerry, and what happened? That, you know, Bush still stole the election. You know, and it's very upsetting. What I think, though, is that what you're doing, you were saying yourself before that you're not sure that you're making an impact. Everyone, even just talking about it, is making an impact. You know, the fact that you're uniting people from across the country.
Well, that's the hope. Talking,
you know,
about at least we're not sitting in front of television sets. Well, we may be, but we're also doing the program too. So, yeah. That, listen, I've got to leave it there, Jennifer, because we're coming up on a break. But thanks a lot for your insights. I appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. We'll be right back. This is Air America.
Lighting these fires, these bombs, we don't know what's gone wrong. We're getting where we've come from, and all of this violence is killing me. Silence is killing me.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask? Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Jen, what's up?
Hey, how'd you know I was having a party?
Everyone knows you're having a party.
Yeah, pretty crazy, isn't it?
Totally.
Hey, I'm gonna smoke up. Wanna get high? Here, you'll like this.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Army. And yet this week, we will have an all-volunteer army.
Sick bastard. 21 past the hour. If you want to do anything for Janice in Michigan, if you want to, you know, it's cool either way. Send me an email, and I'll pass the email on to somebody I trust. His name is Herb, and he'll get in touch with you and tell you how to do it. We'll try to do it all by email, all right? If you want to. Right now, here it is. The email from the person in Georgia who was wishing us a happy Easter. I got one here from Joanne in San Francisco wishing us a happy Passover. Dear Mike, I hear you tonight and tomorrow night on tape delay. Too many meetings to go to. I wish I could paint my doorpost with lamb's blood so the George Bush of death would pass over my house, your house, every other house. Why is there no Moses to guide us out of this endless desert of a Bush administration? How could so many worship at the golden calf of oil and then expect no punishment? Must we wait until January 20th, 2009 to cross over into the promised land? Can't we TiVo this and leave out the commercials? Joanne and her last name in San Francisco. Okay. Thanks for the wish. Kane. Is it Kane calling from Waterbury Center, Vermont? Is it Kane, or am I pronouncing it right?
You got it, Mike.
Hi, Kane.
How are you?
I'm fine. That's a great name. I love your name, Kane.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to talk about how earlier I heard some discouragement in your tone about what do we do? What can we do? You were talking about when you protested in the 60s and 70s, and I'm right there with you. It was a very passionate time. And now sometimes I just get real discouraged, and when I start hearing you feel like you're a little defeated, I had to call because I want you to know how much you've done for me, because I get so angry and I just yell and people think I'm nuts, and I don't understand why people won't get it.
Well, I don't either, and that's the frustration. That's the frustrating part. I think all of us know what we have to do. I don't know if we believe it's effective anymore. I don't know how effective putting hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in the street really is. It seems to be effective in other countries. Because it's sustained in other countries. It doesn't just happen for a few days, for a few hours. It goes on for weeks, if necessary, until the government being challenged by the people acquiesces to what the people are demanding or gives in or whatever. And I think the demonstrations in this country over the past week, 10 days, by immigrants was an example of that. It wasn't everybody getting together on a certain day. It was everybody getting together every day. And taking to the streets until the point was made. And I just don't know how one goes about doing that. Now, I know April 29th in New York City, there's a demonstration planned. I know there are all sorts of demonstrations in the planning stages and things to do and so on and so forth. It almost seems like one of my emailers wrote to me tonight, and I read it on the air, that a general strike or huge demonstrations neither works really in this country because of the way we're set up. We're not set up. We're not a parliamentarian system. We are not a system that is designed politically to respond to the people. As a matter of fact, our system is designed, if you think about it, to ignore what the people want. I don't, 60-70% of the American people right now wish that George Bush would get the hell out of town. But we can't do anything about it because we have elected representatives in Washington, in the House and the Senate. There's that firewall, and I think it was a good thing to put it in place 230 years ago, a firewall between the people and the executive branch. But the firewall has the unintended effect of immunizing these bastards from any kind of immediate demands and a necessary response on their part. They can just send Scott McClellan now and just tell everybody to piss off. They're not going to respond. So I'm not sure what to do, and that's the frustration that you hear, at least from me. You understand what I'm saying?
I can totally. I feel the same frustration, and I just feel like I have to do something, because if I do nothing, that puts me like everybody else that I hear.
I know.
They don't do anything.
I know.
So
I'll tell you what. Do this, Kane. Keep thinking. Keep trying to come up with ideas. Keep listening to the program. And stay in touch. And we're going to figure this out somehow, some way, okay?
Okay, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Kane. Take care.
Is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers. Business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
Okay, here's something to think about. April 15th is around the corner. You only have a few days left to get your taxes done, and you don't even have an appointment at one of those tax prep stores. Don't panic. Log on to TurboTax.com. You just answer simple questions, and TurboTax fills in all the right forms. And when you're done, you can e-file and get confirmation that the IRS received your return. No wonder millions of Americans use TurboTax. And you know what? I bet a lot of them started even later than you.
TurboTax.com. Log on, and you're done.
We'll be right back.
26 before the hour. We are on part two, chapter 9 of Orwell's 1984, and probably tomorrow night we're going to hit that scene that, when I first read it, sent chills through me like a knife. And every time I read it, it sends chills through me. But tonight, we are in the section of the novel where Winston Smith is still reading Emmanuel Goldstein's treatise on Big Brother and the party and the three dicta of the party, the three underlying raisons d'etre. We are still in Ignorance is Strength. And let's pick it up with Winston. Julia is sleeping beside him. They are in the room over Mr. Charrington's antique shop. And she's asleep, and Winston continues to read. Even the names of the four ministries by which we are governed exhibit a sort of impudence in their deliberate reversal of the facts. The ministry of peace concerns itself with war, the ministry of truth with lies, the ministry of love with torture, and the ministry of plenty with starvation. These contradictions are not accidental, nor do they result from ordinary hypocrisy. They are deliberate exercises in doublethink. For it is only by reconciling contradictions that power can be retained indefinitely. In no other way could the ancient cycle be broken. If human equality is to be forever averted, if the high, as we have called them, are to keep their places permanently, then the prevailing mental condition must be controlled insanity. But there is one question which, until this moment, we have almost ignored. It is, why should human equality be averted? Supposing that the mechanics of the process have been rightly described, what is the motive for this huge, accurately planned effort to freeze history at a particular moment of time? Here we reach the central secret. As we have seen, the mystique of the party, and above all of the inner party, depends upon doublethink. But deeper than this lies the original motive, the never-questioned instinct that first led to the seizure of power and brought doublethink, the thought police, continuous warfare, and all the other necessary paraphernalia into existence afterwards. This motive really consists... Winston became aware of silence, as one becomes aware of a new sound. It seemed to him that Julia had been very still for some time past. She was lying on her side, naked from the waist upwards, with her cheek pillowed on her hand, and one dark lock trembling across her eye. Her breast rose and fell slowly and regularly. Julia... No answer. Julia, are you awake? No answer. She was asleep. He shut the book, put it carefully on the floor, lay down, and pulled the coverlet over both of them. He had still, he reflected, not learned the ultimate secret. He understood how. He did not understand why. Chapter 1, like Chapter 3, had not actually told him anything that he did not know. It had merely systematized the knowledge that he possessed already. But after reading it, he knew better than before that he was not mad. Being in a minority, even a minority of one, did not make you mad. There was truth and there was untruth, and if you clung to the truth, even against the whole world, you were not mad. A yellow beam from the sinking sun slanted in through the window and fell across the pillow. He shut his eyes. The sun on his face and the girl's smooth body touching his gave him a strong, sleepy, confident feeling. He was safe. Everything was all right. He fell asleep murmuring, "Sanity is not statistical," with the feeling that this remark contained in it a profound wisdom. Chapter 18. When he woke, it was with the sensation of having slept for a long time, but a glance at the old-fashioned clock told him it was only 20:30. He lay dozing for a while, then the usual deep-lunged singing struck up from the yard below. "It was only an hopeless fancy, it passed like an April dye, but a look and a word and the dreams they stirred, they've stolen my heart away." The driveling song seemed to have kept its popularity. You still heard it all over the place. It had outlived the hate song. Julia woke at the sound, stretched herself luxuriously, and got out of bed.
I'm hungry,
she said.
Let's make some more coffee. Damn, the stove's gone out and the water's cold.
She picked up the stove and shook it.
There's no oil in it.
We can get some from old Charrington, I expect.
The funny thing is, I made sure it was full. Ooh, I'm going to put my clothes on,
she said.
Seems to have gotten colder.
Winston also got up and dressed himself. The indefatigable voice sang on. They sigh that time heals all things. They sigh you can always forget. But the smiles and the tears across the years, they twist my heartstrings yet. As he fastened the belt of his overalls, he strolled across to the window. The sun must have gone down behind the houses. It was not shining into the yard any longer. The flagstones were wet as though they had just been washed, and he had the feeling that the sky had been washed, too, so fresh and pale was the blue between the chimney pots. Tirelessly, the woman marched to and fro, corking and uncorking herself, singing and falling silent, and pegging out more diapers and more and yet more. He wondered whether she took in washing for a living or was merely the slave of 20 or 30 grandchildren. Julia had come across to his side. Together they gazed down with a sort of fascination at the sturdy figure below. As he looked at the woman in her characteristic attitude, her thick arms reaching up for the line, her powerful mare-like buttocks protruded, it struck him for the first time that she was beautiful. It had never before occurred to him that the body of a woman of 50, blown up to monstrous dimensions by childbearing, then hardened, roughened by work till it was coarse in the grain like an overripe turnip, could be beautiful. But it was so, and after all, he thought, why not? The solid, contourless body like a block of granite and the rasping red skin bore the same relation to the body of the girl as the rose hip to the rose. Why should the fruit be held inferior to the flower? She's beautiful, he murmured.
She's a meter across the hips, easily,
said Julia. That's her style of beauty, said Winston. He held Julia's supple waist easily encircled by his arm. From the hip to the knee, her flank was against his. Out of their bodies, no child would ever come. That was the one thing they could never do. Only by word of mouth, from mind to mind, could they pass on the secret. The woman down there had no mind. She had only strong arms, a warm heart, a fertile belly. He wondered how many children she had given birth to. It might easily be 15. She had had her momentary flowering, a year perhaps, of wild rose beauty, and then she had suddenly swollen like a fertilized fruit and grown hard and red and coarse, and then her life had been laundering and scrubbing and darning and cooking and sweeping, polishing, mending, scrubbing, laundering. First for children, then for grandchildren, over 30 unbroken years. At the end of it, she was still singing. The mystical reverence that he felt for her was somehow mixed up with the aspect of the pale, cloudless sky stretching away behind the chimney pots into interminable distance. It was curious to think that the sky was the same for everybody, in Eurasia or East Asia, as well as here. And the people under the sky were also very much the same, everywhere, all over the world, hundreds and thousands and millions of people, just like this, people ignorant of one another's existence, held apart by walls of hatred and lies, and yet almost exactly the same, people who had never learned to think, but who were storing up in their hearts and bellies and muscles the power that would one day overturn the world. If there was hope, it lay in the proles. Without having read to the end of the book, he knew that that must be Goldstein's final message. The future belonged to the proles. And could he be sure that when their time came, the world they constructed would not be just as alien to him, Winston Smith, as the world of the party? Yes, because at the least it would be a world of sanity. Where there's equality, there can be sanity. Sooner or later, it would happen. Strength would change into consciousness. The proles were immortal. You could not doubt it when you looked at that valiant figure in the yard. In the end, their awakening would come. And until that happened, though it might be 1,000 years, they would stay alive against all the odds, like birds passing on from body to body the vitality which the party did not share and could not kill. Do you remember, he said, the thrush that sang to us that first day at the edge of the wood?
wasn't singing to us,
said Julia.
He was singing to please himself. Not even that, he was just singing.
The birds sang, the proles sang, the party did not sing. All around the world, in London and New York, in Africa and Brazil, and in the mysterious forbidden lands beyond the frontiers, in the streets of Paris and Berlin, in the villages of the endless Russian plain, in the bazaars of China and Japan, everywhere stood the same solid, unconquerable figure, made monstrous by work and childbearing, toiling from birth to death and still singing. Out of those mighty loins, a race of conscious beings must one day come. You were the dead. Theirs was the future. But you could share in that future if you kept alive the mind as they kept alive the body and passed on the secret doctrine that 2 + 2 = 4.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
coming up to the Flying Monkey Right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Justin Yuen, Jason Isaac, who engineered the program in New York. Dee Neal's our associate producer. But tonight, Matt Emmerich answered your calls. Thanks, Matt. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. I think we have time to get Philip on the air from San Diego. Philip, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Tired. Been a long 3 weeks watching these immigration protests.
I'll bet it has been.
Over here, but it's been very uplifting, too, and it taught me a couple of lessons watching this compared to the anti-war protest. These things locally started out on MySpace.com. And it was with kids planning walkouts out of the school. By the time the end of the first week came, we had 5,000 students marching in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Last Sunday, the police estimated it was 50,000. The organizers estimated it was 100,000 people out in the street. One of the things I noticed is that when we have the anti-war, at least here in San Diego, when we have the anti-war protest, it's a prepackaged one-day event. And then it stops the next day.
Right, exactly.
This went on for 3 weeks, and it's still going on. There's more things planned in the area here. There's more things planned nationally. I was talking at the thing Sunday to Congressman Bob Filner, and he spoke with the crowd, and he spoke with me, and he told me that one of the reasons Washington and the senators got off their butt and held up a Senate version of H.R. 4437, mm-hmm. was because of the amount of the people there. The media couldn't ignore it. Congress couldn't ignore it. And it's what I've been saying all along. They're not going to do anything about Bush unless they see their constituents, loads of people out there, on a continuous basis. And I think what I learned from it is we can't have one prepackaged day of anti-war protest and then go back home and sit down and maybe wait for the November election. What got Washington moving, according to Congressman Filner, and according to what I saw as well, was the masses of people throughout the country and here in San Diego actually getting out there. So there's your solution, folks. We can't have one day. We got to get out there. And especially now, you know, with Bush wanting to use nuclear weapons in Iran, military secret police. I mean, the hell with the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there enough to be concerned and worried about, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And as you're pointing out, this is what populations in other countries, whether it was Yugoslavia when Milosevic was defeated in his election several years back and refused to leave, whether it was the thug in the former Soviet state, Georgia, whether it's French students who are saying or said to the French government, you're not going to institute these so-called reforms, it's going to hurt us. People don't stop when they begin these sort of civic protests. They don't stop until either their goal is met or the military is called in and opens fire on them. Remember when the Russians, with Yeltsin standing out in front of their White House, backing down the troops that were trying to lead a revolution against a second revolution against Gorbachev, and it was Yeltsin who stood out there on top of the tanks with the people, and until finally the revolution stopped, counter revolution. Now, The one instance where, of course, this didn't work is when you get into the sick minds of the Chinese. Remember Tiananmen Square? I grant you it was a long time ago, 15 years ago? But I will never forget one of the iconic pictures of my lifetime was that Chinese man with the shopping bag standing in front of a line of tanks and bringing them all to a halt. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I love that picture.
Oh, my God, that guy. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Sustained demonstrations that continue and continue and continue is what it takes to get the attention, especially in this country. Because I think the leadership, media and government, they understand that we Americans, if we can get 100,000 people together in the street, 6 hours later we're all exhausted and we all go home and that's the end of it, and there's not going to be a follow-up, and they've won. Because all they have to do, all the Bush crime family and media have to do, is sit back on their collective asses and giggle and hoot and laugh at us while we're out there listening to speakers and listening to a pleas for an end to this madness. And then everyone goes home and says, well, I participated in a demonstration today. And the thugs who are in control say, yes, you did. So what?
Yeah, so it's not going to matter. And you can get involved.
But the sustained, but your point is what I'm trying to get to. The sustained, as you saw with the immigrants, the sustained day in and day out. By God, we're here today. We'll be here. There are 100,000 of us here today. There'll be 150,000 tomorrow. There'll be 500,000 the next day. There'll be 1,000,000 the next day. Listen to us.
And
until that happens, the power in this country is going to sit back on its ass and go, oh, look, the proles are out in the streets parading again. Isn't this cute?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it, Philip. You have a nice evening.
You too. Take care, man.
All right. We're out of here. Thank you very much for participating tonight, however you did that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay? Watch your back. Take care. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio.
Radio. Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
Hey, truth seekers, the Republican fools put an idiot in the White House. Bush's war machine is bankrupting our country, and middle-class America is screwed again. Hi, I'm Mike Malloy, and it's time Bush and his cronies get what they deserve, and you can be the one to make it happen. Go to ImpeachBushGame.com. That's ImpeachBushGame.com, and get your revenge by sending a conservative criminal to federal prison or to the Iraq War. Impeached doesn't pull any punches, folks. And if you haven't ordered your game yet, go to ImpeachBushGame.com and do it today.